Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about controlling spray drift. Hopefully, this is a good season for that. It's always a good season to be paying attention to where whatever you're spraying is going. So we're going to give you a few tips today to minimize any off-target movement. As always, if you've got any questions for us, just give us a call here at the Morton Studio, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so to begin the show today, just talking about this whole controlling spray drift thing, this has gotten to be a much bigger topic here in the last 3 years because of dicamba. So when they came with Xtend soybeans, what ended up happening is farmers are spraying dicamba a little bit later in the season. And because of that, there were two issues. One was the drift volatility thing, and we'll explain that in a second. The other was just spraying soybeans tolerant to dicamba at the same time when soybeans that were not tolerant to dicamba were getting sprayed. And with sprayers going back and forth, tank cleanout actually turned out to be a much bigger thing than a lot of people realized, because it only takes a whiff of dicamba to cup some leaves on beans. Now, for the most part, if all it is cupping leaves, you're not going to hurt yield. In fact, you've got just as good a chance to increase yield as hurt yield. So I'm not too worried about that, but nevertheless, we don't like seeing any leaves cupped. It makes it look bad for all these non-farmers. And then also, there are a lot of farmers that just simply don't understand that, hey, leaf cupping, it's not going to hurt you. They go, oh my goodness, it's the end of the world. And I just remember that first year, so 3 years ago, it was like August, and we had some guy called in, and you know, his beans had gotten cupped a little bit. And he goes, well, I just want to know who's going to pay for all this loss. And I go, wait, you've already harvested yet? And he goes, well, no, but I mean, leaves are all cupped. And I go, well, you haven't even taken it to yield yet. Take it to yield. And I said that to literally hundreds of guys. And you know what? For the most part, guys called me back later and said, yeah, yield was fine. Or yield was actually increased. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we want to have spray drift. But what I'm saying is there are some products out there that are so that the plants are so sensitive, they might cup the leaves. Well, all of it makes all of us look bad. It makes people nervous. It gives a bad image to agriculture. So we want to do everything we can. You know, cleaning out the spray tank is one thing. But then we get to this drift volatility issue. So I just want to clarify here before we get going in the show today how we categorize spray drift versus volatility. Now, we'll talk about both today, and you might hear the terms intermingled a little bit, but they are definitely different. So here's exactly what we mean. When we talk about physical spray drift, it's if you're spraying any product and the wind is blowing a certain direction and you can physically see that drift moving over to the neighboring crop or whatever it is. It has moved off target. It has moved out of your field because of the wind directly right now. That's physical spray drift. What volatility is when you spray a product, it lands on the target, but then the vapors pick up and can move later. Volatility is, to me, way more scary than the physical spray drift. The physical spray drift, it's not that tough.
Yeah, it's just it's not predictable. That's what makes it scary to me compared to physical drift.
Exactly. But with that physical drift, it's not tough. I mean, a lot of our fields are big. We've got a lot of 100, 150, 200 acre fields. Okay, so for most of the field, I can do just about whatever I want. And as I get close to the neighboring field where the wind is blowing, then I have to make adjustments, or I just leave that and spray that part another day. So physical spray drift, easy. Volatility, and we've always had this problem with old 2,4-D and old dicamba, where it will land on the target and then those vapors pick up and move. So what we typically recommend, like with dicamba, and even the new dicambas aren't perfect. They're a little bit better, but they certainly are not perfect in terms of eliminating the volatility risk. What we recommend is that you have the wind, you only spray when the wind is blowing for 48 straight hours away from a sensitive crop. If the wind 24 hours later, 12 hours later, 6 hours later, could be blowing toward the sensitive crop, you have risk. And our job is to help you minimize risk on the farm. You've got enough risk already. You don't need any more. So, yes, I realize this makes it challenging for spraying products that could potentially volatilize. And fortunately, most of the products you're going to spray do not volatilize. We don't have this kind of issue. But we do with dicamba. We do with old 2,4-D. Not the new 2,4-D, but the old 2,4-D. We have these issues. So you got to be careful when and where you're using these. Now, I've been an agronomist, okay, so 3 years ago. This whole thing is breaking loose on the dicamba. And at that point, I'd been a full-time agronomist for 27 years. I'd been on the farm just about my whole life. I'd been around dicamba just about my whole life. I'd never seen anything like what I saw 3 years ago. A lot of it, quite frankly, was due to evening spraying. And you say, well, the wind's calm in the evening. I know. That's why it's tempting to spray then. But here's the problem. When there's sensitive crop up, then you've got risk with this volatility. And we see a lot of temperature inversions or air inversions in the evenings and in the mornings. So basically, normally it's going to be warmest at the ground and it's colder all the way up. Well, with temperature inversions, there's a layer that's warmer. Let's say it's 10 feet off the ground, 20 feet off the ground, whatever. And the problem is these vapors, okay, if they just go way up into space, we have no problem. But when they only go up 10 or 20 feet and now they might move sideways, now we have a problem. So we have to be real careful. And again, this is no big deal. If the wind for 48 hours is going to blow away from a sensitive crop, even if you have volatility, you're going to be good. Once you get past 48 hours, the odds of hurting anything else having any more volatility are slim to none. So anyway, those are just our general tips. And we'll talk more about this throughout the show. Again, if you've got any questions for us, just call us here, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or send us an email. We'll get to the Ag PhD mailbag later in the show. Stay tuned. This is Ag PhD Radio.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Our topic is controlling spray drift. It's very important, and I know in our geography, we get a lot of farmers seeing weeds popping up out in fields, thinking, I'm going to be out there pretty quick. But you got to be concerned about drift. We've got soybeans up. We've got corn up. Certainly the wheat's growing. We've got a lot of things going on out there. We've got our friend Nick Flights with us right now with Pentair to talk about this. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show today. Happy to be here.
All right, a lot of different things that farmers can do to control spray drift, and one of the ones that gets quite a bit of attention is particle size. Can you talk about that and what's happening in the industry in terms of spray tips and sprayer applications?
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, just to start talking about drift control, you know, ultimately the nozzles that we use are going to have the biggest impact in controlling spray drift. There's a lot of, you know, other factors and things that we can employ to aid them in that effort, but the nozzle selection is really going to be the most important step to ensuring that we're able to manage spray drift. And so there's been kind of a big push, not just in the U.S. recently, but globally for controlling spray drift, for not only using nozzles with a larger droplet size, but also designing nozzles and promoting nozzles that reduce the number of driftable fines that they produce. So having a tighter droplet size span, we say, so a more consistent droplet size. So instead of having a lot of small droplets, medium-sized droplets, large droplets, kind of having a wide range of them, kind of tightening that window up so we have more droplets and a more consistent droplet size. It's been a big focus in the nozzle and application industry the past several years.
You know, it's really changed, too, in that some products, like especially when the dicamba products came out for Xtend crops, had their own websites, and they changed seemingly every week as far as what spray tips you could use, which ones you couldn't. How much of a battle has that been, being in this industry and now having different products dictate, hey, these are the only tips that are labeled for application with our stuff?
You know, it's been interesting. At times it's been challenging, making sure you're on that label, making sure you hit the updates. But it has brought about a good change, though, I believe, and that today there's more of a focus on drift control. And, you know, I believe that in North America that there was some ground for us to make up. We could do a better job of controlling drift, not just in dicamba and 2,4-D applications, but really in all our applications. Most applications we make, you know, there is room for improvement on drift control. And so I think that kind of focus on specific nozzles, having to seek out a little bit more information and be a little bit more aware of the nozzles we're using in our application, it kind of shed some light on that. And I do think that is one benefit to this all, that there is more of a focus on using good quality nozzles, higher technology that provide drift reduction.
As growers are getting their sprayers ready this spring and winter, we get a lot of questions about boom height and changing up the spacing of nozzles and so forth. Talk to us about that. What have you seen? Have you seen a trend in the industry at all in changing where those nozzles were spaced and the angle on those nozzles so we could get that boom down a little lower?
Yeah, and talking about boom height, that's one of those extra steps we can take on top of the nozzles we select to promote better drift control. The higher our boom is, the more potential we have for increased drift, the farther those droplets have to fall to get to the target. So maintaining a lower boom height has been another trend that we've seen. A lot of people, some product labels like dicamba mandating a maximum boom height, and just in general a promotion of lower boom heights in the industry. So we're seeing more nozzles be developed with a wider spray angle. Going from, you know, 100, 110 up to 120, 130. This helps maintain at low boom heights, maintaining that 100% overlap between our spray patterns to make sure we get good coverage, uniform coverage, and don't have any streaking that occurs. So, you know, that's been one trend. As far as nozzle spacing, I haven't really seen much difference there. It tends to be about 50-50 roughly in new sprayers I see being sold that have 15 and 20 inch nozzle spacing. You know, for most row crop, that tends to be the most common nozzle spacing that's used and that's coming out of the factory on sprayers.
Great stuff as always. Nick Flights with Pentair. Nick, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
We've got Jim Reese with us right now with Precision Labs. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Great to hear Nick, too. What a good guy he is.
Yeah, I like getting the update. And I thought that'd be a great place to start is what's happening with the tips. And now Nick said there's better tips, tighter window on the droplet size that they're putting out. This is great. And for anybody listening, if you haven't updated your tips in the last couple of years, man, this is a big deal. You go over so many acres, and it's such a relatively small expense for the huge investment you're putting in over all your acres on your farm. It's a big deal. Then we also look at different additives that we're putting into the tank, and there are a lot of really good ones. This industry has really changed, too, from, gosh, I remember when Brian and I were growing up, we were nervous. There was kind of one drift retardant at that time, and man, it could make a mess in the sprayer. Now there's some great products to work with. Jim, can you talk to us about that? What are the choices farmers have now for controlling drift, and what are some considerations they should have?
Oh, great question. So you're right, though. The evolution has been significant, and I do remember the types of products you were talking about, the old 30% polyacrylamides that you just kind of added them to the tank and cringed a little bit. You just weren't sure how it was going to turn out. It was so easy to overdose with those products. In the last, 15 years, there's been a big change in the technology that's deployed. So the old 30% polyacrylamides, they're still around. You can still buy them. They're cheap, but they're not state-of-the-art. There's newer polyacrylamides that are they have a retarded hydration curve. You can probably formulate them with a water conditioning agent. So there's those options. There's also guar technology, or the organic polymers, which also have the added benefit of taking those bigger drops that you make and taking the bounce out of them, so you actually get the droplets to stick on the plant. And then there's oil emulsion technology, too, that's products that are based on an oil, but actually work really well through like an air induction nozzle or a single orifice flat fan nozzle.
All right. So when we think about these, Jim, we're getting a lot of questions about growers that want to spray the dicamba type products right now. And certainly the Enlist products have got some technology that's already in the tank. What are you seeing with those kinds of products? And what are some of the other concerns that you've got right now as we're concerned about drift going out there?
Sure. So, certainly if you're going to spray dicamba, right, we've got to make sure that we're using products that appear on the approved list, right? So if it's the Ingenia product, you're using products from the Ingenia approved list and the right nozzles too. I think and you'll notice there are some things going on with dry formulations of metribuzin too. So if you could actually go back and look at the old Fexapan website, you saw like a list one and list two type DRAs. Just be aware that polyacrylamides, anything that's polyacrylamide based, may not play well with dry metribuzin. You can make a big mess in your tank. So you probably need to watch out for that, where the organic polymers like guar based materials are much more user friendly, so to speak, relative to dry metribuzin.
You know, Jim, one of the things that growers are concerned about is the size of the droplets when they add the drift retardant. Do they necessarily make things bigger, and is it a big difference in terms of how products are going to control weeds?
Yeah, really good question. So making big droplets isn't necessarily a bad thing, especially with dicamba. It's probably more of a concern with 2,4-D, but making really big drops, if you can get them to stick to the plant, not a big deal, especially with dicamba. But you do have the polyacrylamides and the guar. Those are all viscosity modifiers, so they tend to make bigger droplets. The good news is with guar, you can at least get the big droplets to stick on the plant. Oil emulsions are a little bit different character. Oil emulsions, the nice thing about them, when you run them through an air induction nozzle or a flat fan, they don't make bigger drops.
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of different technologies out there to take a look at. Speaking with Jim Reese here with Precision Labs. Jim, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
The corn we planted early February have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
Decisions, decisions. Soybean and corn growers have to make a million of them every year. So UPL has narrowed your herbicide decision a little by creating Moccasin 2 Plus. You see, Moccasin 2 Plus works with every variety and trait of soybean seed and provides long-lasting pre-emergent control of multiple annual grasses and small-seeded broadleaf weeds. So make the easy decision, Moccasin 2 Plus. To learn more, contact your local distributor or UPL representative. Always read and follow label directions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about controlling spray drift today in the Morton studio, and we're looking at it from a few different ways. So we talked with Nick Flights with Pentair about spray nozzles. We talked with Jim Reese with Precision Labs about using additives, and it was interesting that Jim mentioned some products will make droplets bigger, but it really doesn't matter in terms of performance with a lot of products, especially when you're looking at some of these guar-based products that take a lot of the bounce out of those droplets. So we're still getting excellent efficacy as long as you're choosing the right products for the herbicides that you're mixing them with. And now let's talk a little bit more about the weather. We've got John Nowatzky with North Dakota State University. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
You know, a great place to start for growers in North Dakota is the North Dakota Agricultural Weather Network, or the NDAWN website. And, you know, do you find more growers that have been moving to that as we've got some products that we're concerned about, like dicamba, for example, that they're using?
Right. And in case, well, first of all, in case, you know, applicators and farmers are not aware, we do have the NDAWN app in addition, you know, to the NDAWN site. But that app can then give you whether or not there's an inversion in the area where you're spraying. You just choose what your closest location is to an NDAWN site.
Hey, I'm glad you brought up this idea of temperature inversions. Can you explain that a little bit? We do get a lot of questions from growers, and having an expert like yourself on, here's my opportunity, John. Give us what we need to know about air inversions.
Okay, well, first of all, I do think that farmers tend to really do a good job in trying to avoid drift. The problem is that in the evening when it's calm, that's when, you know, it's nicest to spray, and it's hard not to, even though that's the time when we're most likely to have temperature inversions, either late in the evening or early in the morning. And temperature inversions are a situation where the temperature is cooler closer to the ground than it is farther up. And that's just the opposite of normal. The normal situation is the higher you go, the colder it is. You know, if you get on an airplane and fly at 40,000 feet, if you check your the temperature, you'll find that it's like 50 degrees below zero or 60 degrees below zero in the middle of the summer. But so this is just the opposite. And during the temperature inversion, there's a couple of things to think of. First of all, air moves horizontally and during an inversion. And so droplets, small droplets, you know, 200 microns and smaller, when they come out of the nozzles, it might take, they can basically move, if there's a wind, thousands of feet before they hit the ground, because it might take maybe 10 seconds or more for it, 15, 20 seconds for it to come down to the ground. Now, in the case of pesticides that vaporize, that's even worse because they can travel for miles. Because and the key thing there is that a chemical can be applied today when all the conditions are perfect, and then tomorrow, because of high humidity or whatever, you can get a vaporization of that chemical. And then if you have an inversion, or even without an inversion, but particularly with an inversion, the wind can blow that for miles. And I've seen that that can go up to 2 or 3 miles where we've collected imagery for dicamba. So that's important. And then also wind directions during an inversion. Usually an inversion is with 5 mile an hour wind or less, but that wind direction can change even 180 degrees during an inversion. So inversions are something that you want to really avoid applying herbicides in particular. And the key is to make sure you know when there's an inversion. Another real quick way, in addition to that endon, I've set up a situation, I mean, an example where you take a little Bluetooth thermometer and put one on a, I use an extendable pole that like you'd normally use to paint a ceiling. Put one thermometer at the top and extend it up 10 feet and put one thermometer at the canopy height. And instantly you can get the two temperatures. And if that temperature below is warmer than the one above, then you've got an inversion.
Yeah, there's some great tips. I just think about how you can see inversions, how you can hear inversions, and certainly there are a lot of tools out there now to empower farmers to find out, all right, I'm not sure, I can just jump on my app and take a look, or I could jump on a website and take a look, or like you say, just with a simple Bluetooth thermometer and an extension pole, you can tell for yourself as well.
All right. And a couple other things, you know, real quickly. One is that inversions tend to form over closed canopy crops faster than when it's an open crop. Like if you've got a soybean field, for example, a cornfield that hasn't, the canopy hasn't closed yet, they won't form as fast as a closed canopy. And the other thing, last thing is that inversions tend to form earlier near shelter belts, especially thick, heavily vegetated shelter belts. So then they last longer in the morning as well. So yeah, there's two more things to think about.
All right, John Nowatzky with North Dakota State University. And again, just a plug, and I know we've got a lot of listeners from across the country and abroad, and thinking about some weather tools that are available in your area in North Dakota, they've got a great tool called the Endon site and also the Endon app to utilize. And hopefully for everybody listening, there's these tools all over. I'm sure there are. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate the work you do. Thanks for sharing a little bit of it with us today.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. You as well.
Hey, Darren, one of the other things that I wanted to mention when we talk about this evening spraying, here's one of the big challenges that I've always seen. Now, forget about inversions for just a second. What I want you to think about is how long does it take for a product to be rain fast? You can look right on the label, and for a lot of products, it's going to say 1 hour. Some products, it might be two or whatever. But what I have typically told people over the years is as long as the product dries onto the plant, then you're pretty good. You should be safe. I'm not too worried about it. Your odds of having an issue are very, very, very slim. Now, think about spraying in the evening. What happens most of the time in the evening? Well, you start getting dew. When there starts to be dew there, do you really think that that product is all going to get absorbed into the leaf? No way. So I just have seen this way too many times where guys will go, man, I thought that product was supposed to work. And we talk about, well, when was it sprayed and everything? And they go, well, it was about 8 o'clock at night. Then we had a rain at like 3 in the morning, but I should have been good. I mean, it was 7 hours later. And I go, no, you're not good. Because if there was dew just starting to form when you were spraying, it formed a little more. The odds are that product was still sitting on the leaf. Okay, so now let's talk about the inversion side of things and the volatility side. Remember when I said earlier with volatility, what we're talking about is product gets sprayed on the target and now it goes up in the air. Well, that's absolutely what can happen when you've got a little bit of dew that's starting to form out there and the product remains on the leaf. So now not only have you extended your rain fast time, you've extended your volatility time. So just be thinking about that. And again, I totally understand the desire to be spraying late into the evening because it's calm. We're in an area of the United States here that's one of the windiest areas in the country. It's blowing all the time. It stinks. I hate that about our weather. Darren and I do a lot of filming, a lot of outdoor filming for our television show. It's really challenging to find the right conditions. We have to be by shelter belts all the time just to block the wind. Otherwise, our show would sound terrible because there's so much wind blowing through all the time. Well, you know, when we start talking about spraying, you got to hit it in the morning. Most of the time, same thing on our farm. And then we try to spray in the evening, but we got to wind it up early. Usually, my advice is quit spraying 2 or 3 hours before sunset. And if you do that, then you should be free from this volatility risk. Now, again, not every product has a volatility risk. So if you're just out there spraying Roundup or Liberty, something like that, I'm not worried. No big issue. You know, most products are just fine. But when it comes to dicamba and 2,4-D, at least old 2,4-D, those are the two that we really worry about. All right, so when it comes to controlling spray drift, again, we talked, you know, make sure you've got your spray tank cleaned out. Okay, that's really important because very often what gets blamed on spray drift is just, hey, we didn't clean the sprayer out good enough. But when it comes to controlling spray drift, there are a lot of ways to do it with spray nozzles, with deposition agents, or basically drift retardants. You can use different products that are a little safer. You could even use products that might be safe on multiple crops. So you've got a lot of options there. Just be careful when it comes to controlling spray drift. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
It came in waves, ruthlessly eliminating the new spectrum of hard-to-kill grassy weeds in wheat. Everest 3.0 herbicide. A new formulation makes it brutal on yellow foxtail, foxtail barley, and other tough grasses. Everest 3.0 gets the weeds you see and the ones you know are coming, with flush-after-flush control. Ask your retailer about Everest 3.0. Wave after wave of grassy weed domination. Always read and follow label directions.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Our topic has been controlling spray drift, and our phone lines are open for the rest of the show here to take your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's get to the phone lines here. Got Braden with us right now out in Montana. Braden, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing today, sir?
We're doing well. You know, we were talking about shelter belts the other day, and I know you had a shelter belt question, and I guess I want to start there.
Well, yeah. Well, and it also goes right in line with the spray drift, because I do have a smaller 250-gallon spray cart that I use in and around the barns and stuff like that. And so for controlling weeds in the shelter belt, that was a great segment on that. But my question is, I was walking through there, and where we're located, I have a lot of very, very large red ant piles. And I bought some over-the-counter stuff and would put it on granulars and mixtures and stuff, and basically it would just make them split. You know, I'd have two piles instead of one ant pile. So I ended up going, finding down in Florida this product called Bifen, and it works great. It's, you spray it on, they take it down and essentially give it to the queen, and it kills the colony. And so I was wondering if you were familiar with that product, and can I add that into my spray cart with my weed control and control insects as well, or am I not doing the right thing?
Okay, so Bifen, you're talking B-I-F-E-N, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. Yeah, so that's just generic bifenthrin. It's the same thing as Capture or Brigade that FMC would sell. And yes, we use that in our shelter belts. So you can certainly do that. It is labeled on a lot of tree species. Even if it wasn't, I will just tell you it's not going to hurt any trees. And you can control not only a number of insects, but it also has activity and a fair amount of mites. Now, it won't be perfect on every mite species, but it will definitely help on some of them. And mites are another issue we commonly see in trees besides insects and obviously weeds. So, yes, you can absolutely throw that together with your herbicide, no problem at all.
Now, does it have any effect on ungulates or, you know, cattle, horses or anything else after it dries?
No. No.
Or,
no,
okay.
No. No, it's so bifenthrin is one of the pyrethroids. The pyrethroids come from the chrysanthemum flower, or that's where they came from originally.
Okay.
And so they are actually quite safe to humans and animals. You just have to obviously follow the label directions. We still want you wearing your personal protective equipment, all that kind of stuff. But what I always tell people is bifenthrin is never going to kill anybody, but there are people allergic to flowers. You think about it, it came from a flower.
Oh.
And so some people are allergic to some of the pyrethroids. So we just want to be careful, because we've seen people get rashes and things like that. But no, I mean, it's one of the safest products that we've got out there in terms of an insecticide and miticide. And you can mix that with the herbicide and you really should have no problem. Like I say, as long as you're careful, use your personal protective equipment, everything's good.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that was my question. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
All right, Brian, we've got a number of questions that have come in here for the Ag PhD mailbag. Let's dive into those.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, I had a real nice email from Chris in Nebraska, and he said he walked into the living room this evening, found my 18-month-old son flipping through the latest edition of your Ag PhD Insider magazine. He said, we're raising corn, soybeans, and alfalfa here in central Nebraska. Feels great to see our son starting to show an interest in farming and an Ag PhD. Hey, thanks, Chris. We really appreciate that. It was a really nice picture, and that's really cool to see. All right, next one comes from Scott in central Alabama. Scott says, we raise Bermuda and Bahia grass hay, both for our farm and local market. We've got a field that we're taking out of corn production to plant Sudan sorghum on to be harvested as haylage. Wondering if there are any pre-emerge herbicides we can use on this crop, or if there are herbicides that we could use over the top once it's planted. Boy, that gets to be tough. Whenever we've got some of those things, like with sorghum, there are very few choices. And with sorghum, we're always looking for concept-treated seeds so we can put on group 15s, notably Metolachlor and Outlook. With sorghum Sudan grass, though, there isn't anything that I'm aware of that we can put down. I know some people use atrazine, but I don't even believe that's labeled for sorghum Sudan grass. So yeah, there really isn't much that's labeled. Now, the good thing about Sudan sorghum combo is that it grows really fast and it shades things out. So if you did a good job in your corn production controlling weeds, many growers have found they really don't need much for herbicide in the sorghum Sudan, especially where they're chopping it for haylage, because they're just going to shade out the crop. The other thing that's kind of interesting is there is an allelopathic root exudate. And I thought this might be an interesting conversation, Brian, is just to talk about allelopathy. So plants naturally excrete compounds to fight off competition. And we see this in a lot of different crops. Like, for example, at the colistimone tree, it was excreting basically mesotrione out into the soil to try to fight off weeds. Scientists were able to isolate that exudate, and now we've got mesotrione as a herbicide, or Callisto, for example, is one of the products that contains that active ingredient. So that's cool. I don't know that anybody's made a herbicide out of this, but there is an allelopathic root exudate coming out of sorghum Sudan grass called sorgholine that gets started about a week after the seed germinates. It starts leaking out this root exudate to fight off competition. So for that reason, we don't see a lot of weed problems as long as you've got a good stand and you get it out there so it has time to grow and get ahead of the weeds. So hopefully you won't have a big issue. Again, you're coming out of corn production, so you should have done a great job on the corn production with weed control. So hopefully you don't see a big issue. Do you have anything to add to that, Brian? Yeah, there just isn't much for herbicides that are labeled in sorghum Sudan grass. Fortunately, we don't normally have a big need to have them. All right, let's dive into another question. This one comes from Tyler. He said, my farm's been using a 2x2 planter fertilizer program for many years. We do a 50-50 blend of 10-34-0 and 28% nitrogen. We have a varying soil that goes from a loam to a sand, and we're wondering if we're getting too much fertilizer out there with the planter that we could be hurting ourselves. We're also coming in at knee-high corn with a Coulter side dress with 50 more gallons of liquid 28%. So that'd be roughly, 150 pounds of nitrogen. So he's wondering, should he split it up a little bit different? What kind of rate could he use out there? Boy, that's, you're
did
often...
Did he say how many gallons?
He didn't say how many gallons he's using. But you do buy yourself a little bit of a cushion by getting it off in the 2x2. I know some folks have gone to a 2x2 on both sides of the row, and that kind of...
Well, it cuts it in half.
Cut it down more, and you could also move another inch over or something like that. The more soil you have between the seed and the fertilizer, the more cushion you have.
Yeah, and the other thing with 28%, it does move in soil. So we don't see near the advantage to banding 28% as we do phosphorus. So I can understand your desire to band your 10-34-0 or any other phosphorus product. We don't know what you're putting on for rate, but a lot of times in 2x2, you have to really get that rate up there. I mean, you'd have to probably be 10 gallons of 10-34-0 and 10 gallons of 28%. Until you get to a rate like that, you're probably not hurting a lot in most soils. But you said loam, which I don't have an issue with, then you said sand. The sandier that ground is, the more risk you have. The less moisture you have in the soil, the more risk you have. So what we would encourage you to do is dig around some now this year, and really, quite frankly, every year. And on whatever side you put that fertilizer on, just dig right there and find some roots and see if you're finding any roots that are burned off. You'll literally see them turn black at that point where they burn off. And if you're seeing that, then obviously, yes, you are putting too much on. So our suggestion, if you say you're worried about it, usually when we're worried, that tells us we're pushing the limits. I might take out some of the 28% I'm putting in the 2x2, maybe cut it back a little bit, do a little bit broadcast early. That would be one way to go.
Be right back with more of your calls and questions after this. Stay tuned.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice with powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time here in the Morton studio. If you have a question for us, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. You can also give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got one from Darren. Boy, great name. Must be a smart guy. He says, if you're farming or just like farming in general, this is a great show. I never miss an episode. Hey, Darren, thank you so much. I don't miss an episode either. I really enjoy it, too. But no, just kidding. We really do appreciate the support. Thanks for reaching out to us and letting us know. I get this one from Nate. He said, if I am doing a good plant tissue analysis program, do I really need to soil sample?
Yep, you do. And here's why. Tissue testing is not predictive. Soil testing is predictive. So here's where I'm going. you might have just enough nitrogen to get you halfway through the season, and your tissue tests show you all along high, 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 until when? Until you start to run low, and all of a sudden it drops to sufficient, then it's low, then it's completely deficient. By having the soil test, you can see, oh, I have 200 pounds out there, or, oh, I only have 20 pounds left out there. That is predictive. So you need both.
Right. Thanks for the question. Got one from from Tony that came in here. And Tony says, are there any good effective residual herbicides that I can spray in the fall that will carry over long enough to replace my spring pre-emerge spray for soybeans? They must be effective enough to last until my early post-spray. I want to plant soybeans early, but my co-op complains and they're reluctant to switch from corn to soybean spray just for me. My primary weed concerns are mare's tail and water hemp.
Yes, Tony, there are products that you can use in the fall that will last all the way through the spring. Now, it depends on where you are located at, so let me just put it to you. I'll phrase it to you this way. You want to spray as late as you can in the fall before freeze up, and then you want to plant your beans relatively early in the spring. Because so I'll give you the example around here. The frost goes out of the ground, let's call it the middle of April, early April, something like that. So weeds are going to get started in late April. If, let's say, you plant your soybeans in late May, that's a full month that you're counting on strictly the herbicide to kill the weeds, you have no crop canopy. Now instead, if you went out there and you planted your beans May 1st, now I'm going to be a lot happier because the herbicide doesn't have to last as long until you reach crop canopy. So again, as long as you spray relatively late in the fall, you plant relatively early in the spring, you can absolutely do this. And the products I would suggest would be trifluralin or Prowl. Prowl for no-till, trifluralin if you want to work it in the fall. And trifluralin's way cheaper. That's the way I would probably recommend for you if you don't have any issue with tillage. And then add to that one of the Authority products. So usually I'll recommend Authority MTZ in the spring. But the problem with putting Metribuzin on in the fall, it's never going to last through the spring. It's not going to last long enough. So I might use, let's say it's Authority first. The first rate in there might have a little bit of activity on your mare's tail. It might have a little bit of activity on the water hemp. But the thing is, the other herbicides are going to absolutely have activity on both of those weeds, especially the water hemp. Now, one last thing I'll throw out when you say mare's tail is part of your issue. What I would do is, it all depends on what kind of soybeans you're planting in the fall. Let's say it's Xtend soybeans, I would put on a strong rate of dicamba in the fall. If you are planting Enlist soybeans in the spring or any other kind of soybeans, I would do a little bit of 2,4-D in the fall. Here's why. Nothing is going to be perfect on mare's tail. So you want to hit it with as much as you can, and the best time to get it is in the fall. So what I'm saying is I would probably go out there with and when you say mare's tail, that leads me to believe you might be a no-till guy or strip-till. So then you might have to go Prowl plus like Authority first plus either dicamba or 2,4-D. Otherwise, if you're doing tillage, I'd probably just call it good at trifluralin plus Authority first, and I'd leave it at that. Now, if you would rather use Valor instead of one of the Authority products, I'd use 4 ounces of Valor. We've had a lot of guys do that with good success. It's just Valor doesn't last quite as long in the soil as Authority. That's why I usually say Authority in the fall rather than Valor. But as long as you bump that Valor rate all the way up to 4 ounces, Valor would be an approved substitute for Authority. Either one of them would work good.
All right, thanks for the question. I got this one from Jake in Northwest Missouri. He said, my wheat is past flag leaf, almost to heading. I was wondering about fungicide options and timing for preventing head diseases and lessening vomitoxin.
Yes, and now is the time to be asking about that. You've got 4 choices as I see it. You've got Miravis Ace, that's the new one from Syngenta. They claim you can spray it a little bit earlier than the other products. The other ones that we would suggest you use that are better for head scab would be or at least good for head scab, just like Miravasase, Caramba from BSF, and Prosaro from Bayer. There's also the really inexpensive generic Folicure, Tebiconazole. And, I mean, the Tebiconazole is like $2. Prosaro, if you're in the Bayer rebate program, that's probably $5, $6, maybe $7. Caramba is probably around $10. Miravasase is probably around $15 to $18. So you've got some options there. Again, with the Miravasase, they claim you can spray a little bit earlier than the others. With Prosaro, Caramba, and the Tebiconazole, we would tell you we want to see the head out and just a little bit of flowering starting, maybe 10-15% flowering. Timing is key. Timing is the most important thing when you're spraying these fungicides, and try to get good coverage on that head. And also, I would just tell you, you're going to obviously get some coverage on the leaves too. Late in the season, we commonly see rust and some other diseases, and these fungicides are pretty good on rust as well.
All right, thanks for the question. I got this one from Bill, Brian, and it's going to be a detailed herbicide program here, so be ready. All right, Bill said, I had some prevent plant last year on the farm, and we had a late season breakout of pigweed and some broadleaf weeds. I was able to work the ground this spring, so it's bare dirt right now. One of my suppliers suggested this program for my soybeans this year going into that ground. Use a burn down with residual, and the residual component would be warrant at 3 pints. Then post-emerge, 3 more pints of warrant, along with 32 ounces of Power Max, 22 ounces of Extendamax, and drift retardant, water conditioner, and surfactant. What would you suggest, additions and deletions?
Okay, well, if the ground's black, I don't know why you need a burn down. But, I mean, we always talk about the three pre's. We really, really, really like that, and it doesn't cost that much money. So, obviously, you are willing to till. Trifluralin costs $4. Throw trifluralin down. That'll do better for you than warrant will. So, that's the first thing that'll save you money and give you better control. But if you want more control, I throw a little bit of Metribuzin, throw a little bit of Valor or Authority with it, and grand total, you're not going to spend a whole lot of dollars, maybe $12, $14, something like that with your pre. Early post, you could even leave out the warrant if you've got the three pre's down. So what I'm telling you is, if it was me, I might consider going no warrant. I definitely don't like it pre-emerge because I can do better and cheaper with something else. Post-emerge, if you want to use warrant to extend your residual, you certainly can. And I absolutely have no problem with Power Max and Extendamax.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Bill. Really appreciate that. Get this one from Clay in Alabama. He said, I've been having trouble with some sickle pod the last few years, and it doesn't respond well to Roundup. My corn started spiking, and sickle pod's a couple inches tall. You had used metolachlor and atrazine as a pre-emerge. Wondering what you would recommend in corn and soybeans for products that could control sickle pod. All right, well, starting with the group 15 down is good. We like to save the atrazine generally for post, but you've already used some up pre, so I guess I wouldn't recommend any more atrazine. Dicamba, status, good options. Post-emerge in corn, I probably like status the best. You can use Liberty if you have that trait in your corn. That would be another option that you could certainly use. In soybeans, I like either Extend soybeans or Enlist E3 soybeans because the Enlist is pretty good, and also Extendamax and those types of products, Fexapan and Genia, are pretty decent. In conventional soybeans, Pursuit or Raptor with some Flexstar could be okay. I would prefer those traded products if at all possible, and of course you have Liberty as well. Thanks for the question, Clay. We really appreciate that. Good luck with your weed control this summer. Had a fun show today talking about spray drift and also getting a little more information about air inversions. That's something that you definitely need to be aware of if you're going to be out spraying, not getting too far into the evening or too early in the morning, and you can avoid those for the most part. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.